Welcome to the 40K Lorecast.
Welcome to 40K Lorecast with me, John Barsotti, and Brad Chester.
This guy.
On last episode, we covered the rise of Ahriman within the Thousand Suns until the Space Wolves ended that rise. Hard.
I mean, I think you meant to say the burning of Prospero.
There we go. On today's cast, we'll cover Ahriman's journey from this moment up to the beginning of like about 10th edition for 40K. As always, please like and subscribe to the podcast. If you want to help us out, we now have Patreon to help us upgrade some of our audio equipment.
Don't forget the John way. Leave a positive comment.
And make sure you leave a positive comment. If you have a negative comment,
well, tell somebody that's not there.
Go find an empty room and shout into there. I'm kidding.
He's not.
But we have a Discord. Come tell me personally. That's what I'm saying.
True story on that.
Because then I'll fix it. So I'm saying, if you have a negative comment.
That is true. If you have a negative comment, don't put it there. Just go to the Discord and tell us how dumb we are.
Tell us how dumb we are.
And we'll accept that because we know.
I'll apologize and fix the problem. It's not a big deal. Let's start with a quick recap into Ahriman from last episode. Ahriman was born on Earth. He was one of the first recruits of the Thousand Suns. He had a twin brother whose name I've already forgotten, and I'm not looking up again.
It's also wildly hard to say.
I'm 90% begin with an
it also ends with a ZD.
Yeah, or if you guys can't tell, it was a week between these recordings, so I've now forgotten some of the stuff. Shortly after being the Crusade, the Great Crusade, the Thousand Suns discovered they were potent psychers and led to something called the Flesh Curse, which...
I need to do on this because this is, again, a guiding factor in Ahriman's life.
Yeah.
Because when his brother fell to the Flesh Curse isn't like, oh no, I'm a Chaos Spawn. It can happen fast. It can also happen horribly slow, where your literal body turns little by little into a writhing tentacle beast.
From the warp.
Yeah, from the warp. But also, it horribly hurts, and you're aware the whole time because Nietzsche's a dick.
Yeah.
Like, just period. And Ahriman was tied psychically to his other psychic brother, his twin brother. So he effectively went through death throes of his own. And he is driven by this fear, and then also driven by the fact that he's been, which we see a lot of times in our chaos hero anti-heroes,
yep,
he's been betrayed over and over and over again and been misled. So these are two things that are really driving the things, because he's going to do some bad shit.
Oh, yeah.
Am I saying that it's okay that he did this bad shit? No, I'm just giving a cause for this bad shit to have happened. When you look at it, you go, oh, he isn't just evil because he's evil. He's evil because he went down a goddamn long staircase of shit that happened to lead him down this path that he eventually, again, chooses for his own.
Well, actually, let's dive into those real quick because, you know, Magnus, we'll start with his first betrayal, was Magnus. Magnus told him.
Well, Magnus, triple betrayal.
Well, yeah, well, the first betrayal of Magnus.
But he literally.
We'll do it with the first betrayal of Magnus. So Magnus told everyone, hey, I'm lifting this flesh curse. But he did it by making a deal with Tzeentch. No one knew this, but Magnus did that. So Ahriman discovers later that he actually didn't lift the curse. He just made a deal with Tzeentch, and the curse very much so still existed.
And then also always knew about chaos, always knew about the warp, knew about the gods of chaos, knew that there was powers there. He got effectively betrayed by his best friend.
Then he gets a worm drake, betrays him after giving him all his secrets.
He doesn't just betray him, publicly betrays him in front of the lore, the entire rulers, the emperor.
Well, takes the side of everyone who's against him.
Right.
And gives him all of his information. And then, let's not forget, he then got betrayed by the Imperium. Because the thing is Ahriman, Magnus, none of these guys realized that the emperor sent Leman Russ to Prospero to just kind of smack Magnus. What they saw was what Horus did, which was they sent Leman Russ. They believe
to
the emperor
end the Thousand Suns.
Yeah, they believe the emperor sent the Space Wolves to kill off the Thousand Suns.
All of it, destroy their planet, which so they did.
This is where Ahriman's at. I've been betrayed by my Primarch, who I've had implanted the implanted genes of. I've been betrayed by the only really close friend I made in my journeys.
Who literally used, mark it down, people that keep my literallys.
Yeah.
Who used all my innermost thoughts that I told him in confidence and things that I thought were going to be the everything that swayed him and the Imperium to my ways of thinking, and effectively used private conversations and all of the things that I thought were going to be great. Remember Magnus, Ahriman in the first, when we talked about, had his whole, guys, look, psychics are great.
Look at all the great things I can do. And yeah, I got betrayed.
And then he basically made a video.
He made a montage of all things Ahriman said and how bad they are. It finalized with the Emperor himself betraying him. So Ahriman realizes at this stage, he just cannot trust anyone but himself. Then
Magnus knows that the spaces are coming. He finds that out also.
Oh, that's also that one too.
He just constantly, Magnus did a triple play betrayal on him.
At least.
I'm saying at least three big
three
things.
Minimals. Yeah.
Yeah.
So at the end of all this, what we have is that Armand's kind of come to terms with, I can't trust anyone. And all the problems that I encounter, there's only one person who's going to do it, and it's me. So effectively, I'm going to go fix all my own crap. So with that, we'll pick up from the storyline. So
Magnus eventually stops going full emo, and boom, we've got his, Prospero being, whoops,
moves into the warp. Is now in the warp.
Now it's Planet of Sorcerers.
Now it's called the Planet of Sorcerers because for once the GW named something that actually makes some sense. Half the time I can't pronounce what they're saying, and then the rest of the time they just phone it in. So this one is now, they'll live on the Planet of Sorcerers.
I do want to point out, the note here says Ahriman is furious with Magnus. I don't think furious really encompasses how wildly pissed off he is.
Yeah, Ahriman is at a level of anger towards Magnus that really can't be quantified. And at this stage, Ahriman's just done with him. Like, that's it. I don't need you anymore. The biggest problem is once they arrive, in the warp, Tzeentch's deal is concluded. Yep. So all of these flesh curses.
You got to remember that one of the reasons why Magnus was letting himself get thunder kicked in the head was he was trying to, in the worst way possible, by the way, circumvent and get away from the prophecy of all of this stuff happening and him being fully in Tzeentch and the Thousand Sons being effectively slaves.
Tzeentch's army. That's what it was. Right. The idea here is that the Thousand Sons were going to become Tzeentch's army. That was the deal. So, yeah. And Ahriman decides, let me rephrase it. Once they're in the warp, the flesh curse returns. And
it doesn't just return. It goes.
They're all just flipping into chaos spawn all over the place.
If you're inside the warp, weird things will happen. Once they get to the warp, the flesh curse returns crazily. Mm-hmm. And most of the Legion doesn't even know where they are.
Oh, that's a good point.
Because remember, you were just getting your ass kicked. Everything's going down. You're somewhere that looks crazy. Oh, and your buddy just turned into a spawn next to you. You don't even understand how things are going on because not everybody's a psyker. A lot of the Legion are just dudes.
Are just dudes whose souls have been given to Tzeentch, by the way. Like that's
they have
part of
no
the
idea this is happening. And also, they're a lot of them are just mutating and no one knows what the hell is going on. And the non-psykers also don't really have any idea how to do anything about this. A lot of the psychers are trained in psychic defense and things of that nature.
They can hold it off a little bit.
Right. But the non-psychers are just, hey, man, is there a demon literally next to me right now? Oh, yeah, because I'm in the warp. And they're not even fully in. They're in that weird halfway Eye of Terror.
Yeah, this was terrible writing. Like they're halfway in the Immaterium and the Materium.
Right. That's the whole Eye of Terror, now the Rift book.
Yeah.
If you go to new, but it's thing. How about this? Things are just going shitty, guys.
Yeah. We'll sum it up with that.
Shit's going down and it's not good.
Ahriman decides at this stage, he's going to take care of the flesh curse himself.
Remember when we last ended the last episode, everybody, Ahriman has the Book of Magnus.
Exactly. He's got all the knowledge.
He is literally number two. All of the knowledge that you can get, well, at least that mankind knows about.
Yeah.
Unless you're the Emperor and you've got all kinds of shit and you won't let anybody know about it because you're a bad person. But I'm going to get smashed for that one.
But I will say, Magnus does forbid Ahriman from making any attempt on it. And this is the one time I'm going to take Magnus's side. Because Ahriman's entire plan here is to use the powers of the warp to overpower the curse that's on him and his brothers from a warp god. This was probably not going to work, and Magnus kind of knew it.
Is there been a bigger my bad than what is about to happen?
No. We're about to get into what is called the rubric of Ahriman.
Otherwise known as the rubric of damnation. Thank you very much.
There we go.
When something is also called the rubric of damnation, probably some shit didn't go as well as you would hope to.
Yeah, those of you who play 40K, you're probably aware that the Thousand Sons are still part of the Tzeentch. Yeah, so anyway, we're about to explain a lot of that to you.
I mean, to his credit, he got rid of mutations 100%.
He did. This is an option. So Ahriman uses the Book of Magnus and figures out a super special spell that basically removes the flesh curse from them. And he tests it out a few times, and it's successful.
Well, I mean, yes, you're not wrong in that telling, but it was probably successful because, I don't know, the god of hidden knowledge and deceit.
Yeah, made it so you were 100% successful on your trials that, again, you're doing in the warp.
In his realm maximum power.
On beings whose souls he owns. Weirdly, yeah, this thing works great. Ahriman then realizes that the only way to save his legion is to get a lot more psychic power. And, you know, like all the psychic power. So he decides to build his own cabal of sorcerers.
One of the first, and also the largest that ever, I don't think there's ever been a bigger collection of anything.
Of sorcerers? I don't believe so.
No.
I don't believe so. And everyone comes together, including someone who's going to come up later, Ahriman. Now, because of the way we told the story, we've been able to skip on Ahriman. It's probably Ahriman. Knowing the British, it's probably pronounced Ahriman. We've skipped a lot of the stories of Magnus. Ahriman was the person who raised Magnus. Like every single Primarch story, there's someone who raises them.
And again, he was raised on a psyker planet.
He was raised on a psyker planet. Ahriman's actually one of the better ones. Like a lot of the people who raise the Primarchs in the stories tend to be kind of pieces of garbage. Like Corferon's a pretty good example of this.
I mean, most of them are trash fires.
Luther. Like a lot of the people who end up like really taking the Primarch under their wing tend to later try to manipulate them. Ahriman never did. Ahriman, to his credit, was always supportive of Magnus, really cared for Magnus, really wanted to help Magnus.
Yeah, but I know a side thing on this. I think that one of the reasons, though, is he's a super powerful dude unto himself.
Yeah.
So I think he has a lot less jealousy because I think a lot of the...
You're right.
That's I think a lot point. Of the foster fathers of the Primarchs ended up being notable figures that were jealous in the end.
They're horrifyingly overshadowed.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you don't even
count. Well, they were big deals before.
Yeah.
And then they became side notes after.
Yeah. Because one of them used a Primarch as
why don't more people talk about me? Because the dude you hang out with is a demigod. So we're probably going to talk about
him. Like, if you haven't listened to our Dark Angels episode and me going off on Luther, go ahead. Yeah. It really is.
You're like Hercules and the dudes that came with him.
Yeah.
That are always going to be known as the dudes that came with him.
2 feet shorter than him.
Like, yeah.
No. And for those of you who do metric, one like 0.8 meter. Like, so like we're talking a lot. Like, it's a lot smaller. This is not real. Anyway, the point being, though, is that Ahriman was able to put together effectively every powerful psyker that existed within the Thousand Sons because his goal here was good. I'm going to get rid of the flesh curse. Everyone must get rid of the flesh curse.
Which, again, is I want to go over this again, and I know I've said it in both casts now. Ahriman has, I don't care. He has actual good goals.
Oh, this most is a great intention. None of this is selfish in any way, shape, or form.
He's actively trying to help his brothers out.
Yeah, he's not trying to show up Magnus here. He's not trying to do anything. He is just saying there's a problem. He's vanilla icing it. If there's a problem, He'll solve it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Check out the hook, baby.
Yeah. It's like, anyway, good luck with that playing in your head the next 20 minutes. The good news is the spell works. The flesh curse is removed.
It's also one of the, I have to think back on this because there's been a couple recent things that were bigger, like with the rift and stuff like that. But at the time, I really think that this might have been the biggest spell that's ever been attempted, power-wise.
Yeah, I'm trying to think through, going through heresy. No, yeah, this would have been it.
This would have been because this one affects every thousand suns. Any, it doesn't matter where they are. It has unlimited reach.
And that actually is one of the funnier parts is that, you know, as we've said, like when Magnus teleported Prospero to the warp, it was just Prospero. There are random thousand suns just on a planet somewhere. This spell hit them. Guy was just hanging out, you know. Maybe he quit. Like he's like, I maybe years ago he quit. I'm out of the thousand suns. He's on some planet. Like
didn't matter.
Yeah, he's just farming, just doing a thing.
This is again
the having thing a drink, kicking their feet up.
All people, the original legions. You can make arguments for successors and all that kind of stuff, but the original legions are all effectively, if you D&D it, they all have a silver rope tied to them from the astral plane. Everyone is connected by their origin with the Primarch.
Yeah. So there were, and the reason I bring this up is this is to me, I'll be honest, I was laughing writing it, thinking about some guy just having a drink. And then, like, all of a sudden, what happens next just hits them out of nowhere because they're not on the planet of sorcerers, just anyway. But this did affect every single legion. So all of the energies that happened from this spell hit the Marines everywhere. If they were a psyker, they were cured.
To be fair, if you are a psyker, and you have to be a significant psyker, but if you're a psyker in the Thousand Suns, you know what? This spell worked perfectly.
You couldn't have been happier. Just curse,
you no
curse
longer
over.
Have mutations. You feel great. You just got a B12 shot. You're ready to rock and roll. However, if you are not, I didn't just snorted on that because I love this so much. Because I've been joking about this since I've been playing the game for 2.5 decades, which is everyone else, Aramon had to go, whoopsie, my bad, because there's a reason why Thousand Suns have a rule called all is dust.
Yeah.
Whoops. Because everyone that wasn't a psyker just got dusted inside their armor, which was sealed, and their soul was trapped inside.
The amount of this is, this story is crazy. The amount of energy that hit them was so powerful that it disintegrated them into ash, but was also so hot that it sealed their armor so tight that their soul couldn't escape it.
Yep.
So effectively, all, and this was when we say all of thousands, the vast majority of Thousand Suns were not super powerful psykers. So we're talking like 98% of the Legion, probably maybe not as low as 95, are now husks. They are a piece of power armor or Terminator armor that is sealed and a soul is trapped inside, but that's all that's inside.
Let's talk about Dad.
Yeah, Magnus. Magnus senses this spell go off, and he's a little less than cool about it.
I would say he's definitely giving it a 0-star Yelp review.
Magnus, so they did this spell in a tower on, you know, the planet of sorcerers, because of course it's in a tower. Anyway,
I have to give Aramon mad props to this.
Oh yeah,
because everyone else in the Cabal.
Well, hold on. Let's check with me. So Magnus senses this and it literally attacks the tower.
Teleports there.
Teleports and just starts wrecking shop instantly.
Also, Magnus is a newly formed demon Primarch, by the way.
That's a good point. Yeah, he went from a 9-foot-tall man with one eye to a 14-foot-tall
winged Primarch.
Horns. Yeah, and
with two artifacts now in his hand, too. I mean,
so he comes in and immediately all of the psykers just bend the knee and say, our bad. Well, Except for one.
The thing is Magnus is new. Yeah. Aramon gives him the big F you.
Yeah.
And goes, what?
Yeah.
Like, hey, remember when I fixed shit when you didn't fix anything?
Mm-hmm.
This is a ballsy move because Aramon's a cool, tough dude. Magnus would accidentally devastate Aramon into nothing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he could actually pull him. If you've seen Deadpool 2, when the Juggernaut pulls pulls Deadpool in half, that's easy move for Magnus and Aramon.
Yeah, like laughably. There is no, you know, Aramon and Magnus are fighting in the main event. You're like, no, seriously, who's fighting? Because that's going to last 22 seconds.
I know, just I'm watching it. What a dumb fight.
Could I bet on just how many seconds it takes before he rips him in half?
And to Magnus's credit, he decides, yeah, I've had enough of Aramon now, and goes to kill Aramon. However, he can't.
True story.
Yeah, he can't kill him. As he goes to hit him, his hand is stayed, is what it says in the book.
And I got to give this to kind of the same thing that's going on with the Death Guard, which we'll hit at some mm-hmm. point in time. We've talked about it, though, with our Horus Heresy cast that we've done. The actual champion of the gods isn't the Primarch.
No.
As with Typhus, with Death Guard, let's be honest. Man, Aramon.
Oh, Tzeentch loved Aramon. Still does.
Aramon also, you know, screw it, I'm going to say it. People bitch because Magnus is fairly popular, but like, Aramon's a more worthy foe. He's also more fun to lead along.
Well, I mean, I would argue,
but he's more passionate.
Let's get in real trouble here. Of the Chaos Legions that exist in 40K, we've got three Primarchs, correct? Yeah, we have three Primarchs that are available for play in 40K.
Angron, Morty, and Magnus. Hey,
I would argue Angron is probably maybe Karn the Betrayer. I think in most cases that the Space Marines, there's a key Space Marine who's actually more, from a lore standpoint, it's more interesting than the Primarch.
So Karn's amazing.
Yeah, there we go.
He's also more dedicated to Karn. Yeah.
So I mean, I just
and wildly, Morty's not even close. I mean,
yeah, Typhus is way.
Typhus is like laughably.
The model's better in the models are way better on the Primarchs.
Oh yeah. But the thing is with it, I actually think from a Tzeentch standpoint, you have to look at he gets pleasure in the long term plan, the constant betrayal, well,
and Tzeentch can see the future.
Right,
that's the biggest.
But Tzeentch knows that he's going to do these things, but also I think that like Lucy with Charlie Brown. Yeah, I'm going that far back. No one has pulled the football away more than Tzeentch has pulled the football away from Aramon. And the thing is, but to give the proud GW props where they need props, we give them shit on bad writing. They've done a great job over the years of leading Aramon on, giving him just enough rope to constantly hang himself.
It does get annoying though. By the end of this cast,
yes,
you realize it's
I'm just he falls for things that yes, but like it's always he's trying to get there, and he does get a lot of successes before he gets the rug pulled out.
But it's the Abaddon situation of like at a certain point, you know,
Aramon does do a way worse job than Abaddon does on being self-aware.
Yeah,
because of the fact that he has goals that are, I mean, basically unreachable, to be honest with you.
It's fair.
Abaddon has real goals that are possibly, I mean, as of the writings too, he's doing a good job of it.
Yeah, Aramon's.
Aramon has like also goals. You're like, really, man? Like world peace? Okay.
No, that world. Galaxy
peace. Yeah, my bad.
We'll be right back after a quick break. It's time to accept it. Holidays are upon us, and finding gifts for people is never easy or really fun. Luckily, we at the 40K Lorecast have a new sponsor, which will help you make your holiday shopping fast and easy. Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. Add some personalization to your holiday shopping with Uncommon Goods. Did I go there and buy the game Fart Bingo? Yeah, I did. Is it for my child to play with his friends? We'll go with, yeah. At the same time, I was able to get a cocktail smoker. So yeah, those are probably all for me. Anyway, that's what's great about Uncommon Goods. They have uncommon, get it, collection of items you can choose from, allowing you to pick up a fun variety of items this holiday season. you'll find thousands of gift ideas that you won't find anywhere else. So, shop early, have fun, and cross some names off your list today. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/40klore, 40klore. That's uncommongoods.com/40klore for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
By the way, as we're saying, Magnus goes to kill Ahriman, and the downside of giving your soul over to a chaos god is he actually can stop you from doing things and just stops Magnus mid-strike.
This is also the time when Tzeentch could do, he probably still can do, but definitely at this point because Magnus is new to his new powers.
Yeah.
Magnus. So he hasn't found his own way. Magnus has been involved in 27,000 rituals since then.
We're probably at this point maybe a couple weeks into Magnus being a demon prince. So he just discovered that Tzeentch can stop him from doing stuff. So he does. He stays Tzeentch's hand because he knew how valuable Ahriman would be to him and just won't allow Magnus to kill him. What's going to end up happening? So Magnus then decides, all right, I can't kill you, but I'm banishing you from the Cabal of Sorcerers.
He kind of goes, I can't kill you right now, but you know I'm going to be able to kill you like in a minute and a half.
Yeah, I'm going to go figure this out.
We have a pretty fickle dude that's in charge here.
Yeah.
He may or may not have a couple guys with two heads that say different things. Yeah. He changes his mind a lot.
Yeah. Ahriman.
You need to get the hell out of Dodge.
So Ahriman takes this and he decides, I'm going to go into exile because he also has the same realization that Tzeentch tricked him. He does realize that, you know, the same way Tzeentch just stopped Magnus from doing something, Tzeentch tricked him into this.
And this is the first of many of Ahriman's wild, flawed reasonings. Because Ahriman decides, I need to get more powerful. But how am I going to get more powerful? I need to get more powerful by getting more Tzeentch power and more knowledge from the God of Knowledge so that the God of Knowledge and Deceit doesn't betray me again. You're like, you should say that out loud.
Yeah. Write that down, look at it a few times, and then hit yourself. So Ahriman goes into exile. No one really knows where he is. He just disappears. That being said, people were pretty pissed. As Pit Magnus was the most pissed, but the other psychers were also pissed because
everyone they knew is now an automaton.
Yeah, they're all dead. Like just dead.
Well, actually, dead would be way cooler than being a soul trapped in a piece of armor. Yeah.
Screaming soul, by the way.
I forgot to mention you're also being tortured the whole time. Yeah,
you don't want to be in there. As we mentioned earlier, Ahriman is now takes up effectively the mantle of leadership because Magnus, always, starts sulking and gets sad.
You know, I like Magnus so much more before we had to do this cast. Because I had to remind myself, I've never looked at all of them in together.
Mm-hmm.
Man, there's so many times with Magnus is at home, like listening to the Smiths, just being just sad.
Sad.
I mean, so many 80s references today. But
Ahriman decides that the only way to reverse the curse of Ahriman is to use Ahriman. It's not really clear what their plan was. I assume it was sacrifice Ahriman. Who knows? But effectively, they decide we're going to track down Ahriman to undo the undoing of the flesh curse. Tzeentch is just
at this point in time, I think that Ahriman made it a little too basic.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of I'll just kill this dude that did it and it'll all work itself out. And again, you're like, yeah, man, but you're sacrificing him to the dude that let this happen.
Did it. Yeah. We keep the Thousand Suns are in this kind of like infinity loop of I'm going to go out, overpower and out deceive the God of Knowledge and Deceit. And I'm going to do it by using the powers of deceit and knowledge from that God. And you're kind of like, this is never going to work, but the whole
Legion keeps doing it. You mean the God that sees the future and gives you your power?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's probably going to be suckier.
I mean, Ahriman ends up being kind of a dick, actually. This is the stage where Ahriman does turn a little bit. He forms his own legion within the Thousand Suns. He calls them the Brotherhood of Dust. He then takes this legion, decides to effectively conquer all the other legions within the Thousand Suns.
Well, he does a Genghis Khan.
Yeah.
He just keeps showing up places and going, hey, you want to join me? Or would you like me to kill you? And you're like, well, I guess. I don't agree with you at all, but also I'm super cool with not dying.
I bring it up, and it's an awkward thing to bring up because it has no bearing on any part of the story, but it's important. It's hard to explain in that sense because, and we'll get to it in a minute, but effectively, Amon takes this one like faction within the Legion, and it grows massively, but he does it through just brute force.
Well, the thing is it's fairly easy to do this, though, because every sorcerer is leading a squad of what is now Rubric Marines.
Yep.
Or they're actually leading more, but in the game, they're leading squads. Yeah. But if you get an Exalted Sorcerer, you get an Inspired, you get all the guys that they're effectively controlling.
Yep.
So you need to convince one dude to get 50 guys. You know what I mean?
So Amon, at the same time that he's growing this Brotherhood of Dust, he's searching for Aramon.
Hardcore searching for Amon.
Nah,
We're talking Empire Strikes Back, get all the bounty hunters together, searching for Aramon. This isn't like a, hey man, I'm casually searching for Aramon. It's hire everyone and or tell them you'll kill them and search for Aramon.
Fun little fortune. Kind of like Abaddon. Aramon was totally fine living his other life, doing his own thing. But if you corner him, you're going to discover what Aramon really was. And
he also does a full Thanos on this because Aramon is off like farming or some shit.
Yeah. Aramon is literally on a war band of Chaos Marines devoted to Khorne. Not World Eaters. It's just a random.
I do like that it said he was farming while he's like straight murder festing people.
Oh, yeah.
In my mind, but he's just doing.
Just hanging out, yeah.
Well, he joined these guys because he kind of turned the mind off, to be honest with you.
Yeah, well, he was doing his own research. The thing about Aramon is Aramon recognized quickly that his psychic powers made him a beacon. So if he was using them heavily, people would find him.
And what he's doing all the time.
Yeah, so he's just been reading
a bunch. That's what I'm saying. He clicks off.
Yeah, and so he's hiding as a sorcerer initiate.
Which is funny because hiding for him is life or death combat. I said he's farming, but that is farming for him.
Oh, yeah, he's with Khorne, who don't like psychers. So if you want to be an unimportant psyker, go be a psyker, a sorcerer for Khorne.
Yeah. Not a big fan.
Yeah. So if Amon gets a lead on where, on Aramon's location within this like Khorne warband, and sends this guy named Tolbeck. Tolbeck actually was one of Aramon's like friends, apprentices, whatever term you want to call with Aramon, knowing that he would be able to expose Aramon.
Things do not go well for this.
No, guy. He walks onto a bridge, confronts Aramon, and Aramon notices who he is and just explodes with psychic energy, killing everyone around him. And one of my favorite stories is he then jumps into the mind of Tolbeck, recognizing, because he wants to know who's
doesn't just jump into the mind. He goes, I'm going to wreck this guy's mind and find anything I can while I'm doing. Yeah. Like the guy's basically already dead.
But Tolbeck sees this coming and actually self-immolates himself. He literally uses his own psychic powers to light him, to burn himself out from the inside. So Aramon can't figure out.
Which was also probably better for him.
Oh, it's
wildly better for him. If we read farther into the stories, which we'll tell you about.
Yeah.
Because Aramon, super not friendly. Also, don't get taken hostage, prisoner by psychers in the 40K world, because they will do crazy things to you. Yeah. You're like, hey, I can't escape my own mind.
Yeah. This, though, does have a side effect. Aramon's explosion of psychic powers, he kills the crew. He ends up taking Tolbeck's ship because his ship's like gets wrecked by this. I don't care why. The problem is, as we said a second ago, he's a beacon of energy. And now Amon knows where he is.
Also, when we say kill the crew, he didn't kill like three guys. He just murder shit in.
Well, he exploded like energy and everyone just melted around him. Yeah, that's what it was. He
opened the Raiders of the Lost Ark arc.
Yeah.
And face melted everybody.
Everyone around him is dead. Amon senses him and goes, all right, I'm sending everyone after him. And it's actually these stories, read the books. I'm not going to give you guys all the stories, but effectively he rips through Thousand Sons, cultists, demons. There's actually a pseudo demon prince that Aramon takes out in this period. And each time someone new comes to kill him, He does the same interrogation to figure out who's sending you, I am, because Armand, as we said, kind of like Abaddon, has now flipped a bit of a switch. He went into hiding and seclusion, and now he's on team Murderface.
Hey, also, sorry, guys. You should have left. Stop poking the bear in both of those stories.
Yeah.
The guy said, I'm pretty done with all this. Nothing has gone right for me. I'm just going to kind of switch it off and just do whatever. And then you came after me. He's like, so it's going to be like that.
Yeah. Eventually, Armand does discover it's Amon who's coming for him. And Armand goes, well, screw that. I'm gonna kick him in the ass, and goes over there. He does. If you can read the books, I don't feel like diving too far into this.
It's a cool battle, actually.
Yeah. He loses the first battle and gets captured by Amon, which is cool. He gets, as with all GW writing, he then has some random allies who show up for no reason, and they go to escape. But just as they're getting out of the ship, Amon appears in front of them. Again, the story's better than that, but I have to shit on it a little bit because it's the tripe of, I'm going to go get you. I'm going to lose my battle. I'm going to get captured. Oh, woe is me. Then I'm going to run away, and then I get one more chance to fight you. Anyway, Armand and Amon now have a psychic duel.
It is kind of cool because of the fact that the cost of a psychic duel is wildly worse than a regular duel.
Oh, yeah.
You can be healed. You can be whatever. If you lose a powerful psyker on psyker duel, they effectively snuff out your soul, mm-hmm, because you are fighting with soul powers, effectively. That is what happens when you draw from the warp. You draw from your inner self. You're powering this stuff from your ability to control basically powers from the warp through you. And when you lose, well, shit goes bad. You're kind of just snuffed out. Yeah.
And that's effectively what happens here. Armand and Amon are fighting, and eventually Armand unleashes one last little piece of information. The rubric that cursed the Legion also bound the Legion to one person. That person now has complete control of that Legion, every member. And that person is Armand, because this is his spell. This is cool as hell. What he ends up doing is effectively taking control of Amon's body and creates a psychic fire around him and everyone.
It melts him down.
Well,
except for his horns.
Well, two things.
His helmet.
Yeah, so two things happen. First off, if anyone who played 40K, that the helmet that Armand wears with the giant horns, that wasn't his helmet. That was Amon's helmet. That helmet comes as this fire is burning. All of Amon's power armor breaks off of him and goes over to Armand and reforms on top of Armand, including the helmet. Additionally, though, in the Horus Heresy, the Thousand Sons were an army that wore red. In 40K, they're blue. That's what happens. It's sure. This fire,
oh, really?
Burns their armor.
Sure, they are.
Dick. Brad is making a face at me because I forgot he can't see. Brad is colorblind, and he just discovered something.
Dicks.
Brad just learned something about Thousand Sons.
Thought they were black.
Yeah.
Whatever.
All this happened to us. Now we kind of get this transition of Thousand Sons going from heresy, you know, like 30K Thousand Sons to 40K Thousand Sons. Armand is now the head of the Legion. Their armor is blue with gold trim. And
we also have, again, Rubric Marines. Rubric, if you're Rubric whatever, you are trapped inside your army. You all is dust.
Mm-hmm.
And you are led by a psyker.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be led by a psyker because you are automaton.
Yep.
And that's been from then till now.
And now Armand is, and this is where, I mean, the writing here gets a little bit tricky, because technically Armand is now has power over the entire Legion.
Magnus is this polarizing figure because he's amazingly awesome and he's amazingly lame.
Yeah, Armand's a much better leader for the Thousand Sons.
Oh, 1,000%.
He's just not as powerful. Magnus is just.
Oh, Magnus is bonkers if they're more powerful.
Although I will say I played three games at Adepticon team with my Thousand Sons. I had Magnus and Ahriman. Magnus died in two of those three games. Ahriman did not. But I will, yeah.
With a unit of Warflamers, baby, that are plus one to wound, rerolling wounds on an objective.
Yeah, I didn't bring those. It was team tournament, so I just brought Bolters.
You just make me sad. You're not allowed to talk.
You try to win.
By the way, they're free. It's not a...
Oh, I know, but if you're trying to win a Adepticon team tournament, I'm kind of like, really?
Bring the goddamn Warflamers, Ross. Yeah.
Right. Anyway.
Also, they're way cooler.
They are way cooler. Moving on after this stage, to a couple little side stories about Ahriman. They get us up to 40, the 40 rest monument. So Calliope. One of the big advantages to Ahriman coming back into the fold of Thousand Sons is he's now light years more powerful, because not only did he kill Ahriman, he absorbed Ahriman's soul. At the same time, Ahriman's learning all of the ways of Tzeentch. And one of the really cool things Tzeentch can do is affect time. It's not necessarily time travel, but he can affect time.
It is and it's not. We can argue this one all day, but we won't. Ahriman does a lot of conflicting things in the book.
Yeah.
Because of the warp and the fact that it affects time. Again, we've talked about how sometimes you travel and you show up before you left.
Right.
Ahriman does a lot of this in a constant but small scale. Like, it's never huge jumps, but he's almost always doing back and forth.
Yeah, it's like he almost has the ability to kind of make small changes to the fates. Like, you know, if you like Greek mythology like I do, like he can affect the fates a little bit. And Calliope is one. Calliope is
but this is another one of his obsessions. It's one of the knowledge obsessions. Mm-hmm. Is Ahriman knows, Ahriman's self-aware in the fact we said he's not as much as Abaddon. But he is aware that he's in a losing battle, but he's obsessed with finding a way to cheat out, to stop fate from happening, to stop the guy that's wildly more powerful, that sees the future. So he's obsessed with, how can I win this game that the guy already won 27,000 moves ago? How can I cheat this? How can I stop this from happening? Sorry, but continue. But this is a driving force.
That's a good setup, because what he realizes is that he can't take the knowledge Tzeentch is giving him, because he'll never get the full knowledge. He has to get the other knowledge. And there's two places that this knowledge exists, the Imperium and, hint, hint, to where we're getting a little bit further, the Eldar. So, but we'll start with the Imperium. There was always a world in the Imperium called Calliope. Calliope? I don't know. I'm gonna do this with Italian, because it's easier. Calliope.
Calliope.
Calliope. It's easier for me to pronounce it that way. So Calliope was a literary planet, which we didn't cover in our worlds because I forgot to do the library world.
Because a lot of them are considered forbidden worlds.
That's true. Oh yes, we did. We technically covered it. The Inquisition probably has cut all these off.
Yeah.
The funny thing,
a bunch of these aren't listed at all.
Yeah. The funny thing about literary worlds is they are not like collections of data knowledge. They're collections of parchments and books.
They're tomes.
Yes, exactly.
Old school.
A planet-sized. Like the example here is Warehouse in Indiana Jones, but a planet.
And it's important to know that it's also like the Warehouse in Indiana Jones. 99.9% of the shit is forgotten.
Yeah.
Like you could have the secrets to have creation, and it's in row 700 million.
Yeah, the two missing Primarchs were just in there with descriptions and everything, probably even what was done to them. So,
right. You're like, yeah, that's right behind the best way to make cheese.
Exactly. One day in Calliope, though, in Calliope, something changes. Its caretakers, a small cult starts to form within the caretakers, talking about how, hey, we should be converting all of these books and all this stuff to a digital format. And start, you know, basically making the first Kindle, but the super Kindle.
Well, they're just afraid that it's going to be destroyed.
Yeah. And it becomes this obsession. And this cult grows till the whole planet's part of it. And they begin converting all of these tomes, parchments, everything into a centralized database. And with all, you could Wikipedia for, you know, the Imperium. On the day that the emperor is entombed into the Golden Throne, the last piece of the last parchment was typed in. And as soon as it does, the planet goes silent. The Imperium loses access to it, just disappears to them. And in classic Imperium fashion, it takes them a decade to show up.
Which, by the way, legendarily fast for
Imperium. Yeah, that was actually quick. Yeah, you're right. That was quick.
Like, that, the turnaround time on this is top speed. Yeah.
They get there. They discover that everyone's basically dead, except for a few random people who somehow found enough food, because they're all just husks of them. The database is gone. And those who were there just mentioned that all they remember from the moment that happened was a horned blue figure with blue flames around it.
What?
Yeah.
That and sounds like somebody I know.
Exactly. So this is, I like that story because we're talking about Ahriman's ability. He didn't travel back in time and do it. He just affected the time a little bit to send them on a path to do something for him. And he was able to capture all this information.
Yeah, he takes all of the, he's like, thanks for the stuff, nerd. Kicks sand in the face. So, which is funny in itself.
Then we're going to get into a story Brad may not like as much.
Get off my wolves, man.
We all love space wolves. Anyway. Oh. Later in like the 41st millennium, somewhere
I love that we're jumping so far ahead.
Well, because it's Ahriman, like we can jump all over, but it's easier.
The thing is that, and I encourage you guys to read the Thousand Suns books, the Magnus books, which are two different books, weirdly enough, two different sets of books actually, and the trilogy. People ask all the time in the Discord, give us recommendations.
The Trilogy of Ahriman.
Trilogy of Ahriman
Exile
is one of the top five of my favorite series. There's individual books that I like more.
Yeah.
But it's definitely my top five of a trilogy, a multi-series.
And they're quite well written. They're a little bit hard to follow. Don't read them tired.
No. There's so much stuff going on.
Yeah. It time hops. Ahriman is this way. He doesn't, it's not that he time hops, but it's just, you really have to kind of keep track.
They also don't write them in progression. You know what I mean? Yeah. They go back and forth in the stories of what happens in time because he's also living it that way because he goes back and forth in the warp.
Yeah. Ahriman spends a lot of his time just in the warp thinking. And so his brain's all over.
Well, he does two things. He goes back and forth in the warp and he also spends kind of a lot of time in the webway. Not super successful because the Harlequins literally wreck him all the time, but we won't get into that as much.
Well, we're going to get into it.
I mean, say we're going to get into it. We're not going to get into it.
Yeah. Not the level of that because it's boring.
That true story.
Ahriman suddenly gets a phone call from his dad. Hey.
Magnus leaves him a voicemail.
Yeah. Random text from Magnus. Hey, want to catch up? Yeah. And
it's been 8,000 years.
8,000 years. Maybe
it actually has been. No, it's been 8,500.
Somewhere, yeah. It's been a while. Tempers have cooled.
It's been a while, bro. Come on.
Magnus decides, hey, remember when the space wolves jacked us? Well,
I mean, this is an easy lure, though, because one, if you recall, the guy individually who betrayed Ahriman that he's going to remember for, I don't know, forever.
Yeah.
Was a space wolf. And also, he wasn't super excited about the whole Prospero is burning thing.
Yep.
So if you're going to prod somebody into action, this is probably this is a layup right now.
And I'm also going to throw a little bone to the space wolves. Lehman Russ isn't around anymore. So
true story.
That does make
you hold on. So our Primarch's here and yours isn't. Okay.
Yeah. And we also have a mini Primarch in Ahriman.
True story.
So we're going to go have a party. They decide it's time to go get revenge on the space wolves. Fenris is just hanging out, having his normal day. And you know, like a movie when like a really bad storm is on the horizon. Instead of the horizon, make it your entire system. And it's a warp storm. That demon starts shooting out of almost instantly.
Of everywhere.
Yeah.
It is. Where in the system? Yes.
Yeah. Luckily, they were able to get a call out. And the Grey Knights and the Dark Angels... I made a note here. The Grey Knights and the Dark Angels arrive. They never make it clear. Is it the Dark Angels or the Fallen?
Eh. I mean, I think you meant to say the risen.
I'm going with the fallen. How long was it the fallen? Decade? 2 decades?
10,000 years.
Yeah, but no, I'm talking about in gameplay.
25.
Yeah, 25 years. It's okay if it takes me a little bit to learn the new name. All right? Like, I'll get there.
I mean, there's still fallen out there, too.
Yeah, that's one good note. Anyway.
The lion does cut their heads off when he meets them, but continue. Real quick on his judgments.
When the Dark Angels and Grey Knights and the Grey Knights show up, the Grey Knights are not in a good mood because there are nothing but demons everywhere.
They're also never in a good mood.
It's true, but they're in an especially bad mood. The Dark Angels are just like, what the hell?
I mean, also talk about people that are never in a good mood.
Magnus, though, has brought with him one of my favorite things.
The models, the amazing.
Yeah. Oh, it's in
also,
models
rules and rules are yeah. bonkers, Tom. Everybody that plays, bring the changeling, because nothing makes me happier than when you roll that 6 and they don't get the shoot.
Yeah, or charge. It's better
when
they make a charge and you don't get the fight, but the changeling does. And
yeah.
If you know what we're talking about, it's a very fun rule in 10th edition that the changeling has. Really cool model, too. Like, very, very cool model. Anyway, the changeling is it's like the ultimate deceiver within Tzeentch. Its power is to make you view the world or whatever the universe is.
He alters your perception of reality.
Yeah. So much so that the Dark Angels do an orbital bombardment of Fenris.
Because they think that it's only demons on the planet.
Yeah. It's a really cool scene. It's in a book, so read it and use your imagination. This battle is just completely falling apart as a result of this. The Space Wolves are being attacked by demons. Thousand Suns, Dark Angels, it's all of it. The Grey Knights are just getting overrun mentally.
For all you Space Wolves fans, the Space Wolves do continue to kick the shit out of everyone during all of this.
For a period of time.
I mean, it is pretty awesome.
Oh, the Space Wolves are not, they do not take this lying down.
No. Hey, everyone's attacking us? Whatever, yo.
All right, I'm just going to hit all of them. Roadhouse.
Yeah. Not known for their tactics.
Yeah.
But they are tough as shit.
Yeah, I'm just going to keep hitting things and my wolf's going to bite things.
Yeah. However, the people that are into thinking, put 9 towers over the planet.
Yeah. Out of nowhere, these 9 shimmering towers appear over Fenris and they're actually portals.
Not a good look.
Yeah. Out of the portals, all of the Thousand Suns come out in, just nonstop. And after a few more days, the purpose of these towers, 3 days, the purpose of the towers comes true. They actually captured Space Wolves, boiled them in cauldrons. I don't care why, but they did. And this is the final ritual.
Also, that made no sense.
This was
sometimes you got to cook a couple guys. You're like, why? We're just weird.
Yeah, but we had to write it anyway. Effectively, what they were really doing is they were sacrificing Prospero. No, Magnus and his team, What was really going on here with these towers and the, boiling of Space Wolves is what they were doing was they were sacrificing all of the people, all this battle on Fenris to garner enough energy
And they do the neighboring planet, and it's not clear whether they're grabbing a lot of the life around the planet.
Yeah, it's not
100% clear, to be honest with you. You can tell us if we're wrong, everyone, but like in the stories itself, it feels like they're just trying to get as much life as they possibly can. And by sacrificing the wolves that they got, they get, I don't know, partial connection, but they don't get a full connection. It's not like they don't make Fenris lifeless.
No, because Fenris still very much so exists when we're done with this.
100%.
Sort of, for a little bit longer.
Yeah.
He's still there. But Prospero, as a result of with all this energy, just blinks back into reality and it now exists back in the Materium.
Yeah, but in a Roadrunner level of mojo,
yeah.
The Imperium tries to show up with its Acme catapult that they bought. And, smoke bomb, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
And
disappears again. Well, because so Prospero now begins blinking in and out of reality. That's what's kind of cool about it. But now they can enter reality, whereas before they were stuck out of it. My favorite part of this story, though, is, because we've done the cast on them, we can do this now. After all this concludes, and you know, it's the aftermath of Fenris. Fenris has been just ravaged. It's full of death, all these things. The Ordo Malleus shows up on Fenris and realizes that all of these people have seen a demon prince, as in Magnus, because he was walking around, and the Ordo Malleus calls an exterminatus on Fenris and kills the entire population.
Yeah, shit kind of goes down, though. We'll do that in the Space Wolf thing because, John, I can't leave it because Space Wolves are my boys.
I know.
We're going to hit it for all you Space Wolf lovers later on. You know, you can't, I don't care if he's going to try to edit this. I'll say it again in person. Space Wolves do not take that line down.
No, they do not. It is not well received. I just enjoy the fact that Ordo Malleus showed up on Fenris and we're like, let's burn the whole thing down.
A lot of roadhousing goes on after that.
Right.
The Ordo Malleus, spoiler, doesn't win.
No. They do. They at least call it.
Yes. I mean, but also they tapped the strike. So
yeah, it would have had the same effect if they tried to burn Caliban or any other.
I mean, every time you go after the home planet of a Legion, why?
Right.
You every time it goes real bad. Hey, are you a 7 to 9 foot tall super soldier? Oh, you're just some guy? Okay, let's see what happens.
Yeah, I hear your words, Inquisitor. The face I'm making is me not giving a shit.
Bold move, Cotton. How this works.
The last bit we're going to cover on Ahriman, it kind of gets us into the modern 40K, which is his latest obsession after his little party on Fenris.
It's the Black Library.
Yeah, Black Library.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
What happens is Ahriman has now, he got all the information from Calliope, but he finally realizes that the only way he's going to truly undermine Tzeentch is with knowledge. And the only place that he can get this level of knowledge is from the Eldar. Because the Eldar were there before, or maybe at the time. We're going to do some casts on Chaos Gods. Predate Tzeentch?
Well, holy shit.
Technically,
you know what? Screw you. Yes.
Yeah.
And we can argue about this all day long but when the old ones were there, remember, the warp is a serene lake of endless power.
Yeah. No, it isn't.
And the Eldar were created. The Eldar were created and also you'll ruin the warp, Eldar.
Yeah.
Property values are so down.
Right.
But the Eldar have, to be honest, it's another one. They getting one up on me. The Eldar have effectively infinite knowledge that they don't use anymore because they're too worried about the Slaanesh thing. We'll do that in the Eldar cast. Mm-hmm. But they have Bonkersville forbidden knowledge. And this is one of the things that Ahriman is actually doing right.
Yeah.
But he's getting... I like Ahriman a lot, but man, he's getting worked over.
These stories don't go well.
Yeah.
The Eldar have a repository of knowledge, and it's called the Black Library. And for those of you who don't realize why the GW books are called the Black Library, this is why. As much as the annals of the Imperium have information, they date to right about the Great Crusade a little bit before. The Eldar have written everything down that's ever occurred.
That's ever occurred for 65 million years.
Yeah, they have everything.
They have several books.
Yeah, there's a few books. It's the... what was it? What was the card catalog thing you and I had used when we were kids? What was that thing called? You had a library to flip through?
Oh, for finding the Dewey Decimal?
Dewey Decimal System. I thought it had a stupid name. Yeah, the Dewey Decimal System. There we go. There's like maybe 8 people listening to this cast know what that is.
You have a library card?
Yeah. Ahriman decides that this is where he has to go. He's going to go to the Black Library. Now, the Black Library is in the Webway. And the Black Library is the home of the Harlequins.
Whew. And the Harlequins are the descendants of the Laughing God,
yeah,
who is all about doing laughing god things, which is basically shenanigans.
Yeah, you're not going to get through. I would actually make the argument that the Harlequins are the most powerful branch of the Eldar.
Yes.
You're just defeating them is almost impossible. They have superior weaponry, tactics, knowledge.
They know what's happening in the future. And they also still have a god that exists. So
yeah. And Harlequin Solitaire is one of the most powerful beings in the galaxy.
Sorry, Custodes, guys. There's a book where he ruins like a bunch of them.
Yeah.
But yes. Also, they have absolute knowledge and ability to use the webway. So they can close down parts of the webway. They can appear anywhere they want to. Aramon has Padawan levels of the webway. He knows it exists. And to be fair, as far as humans go, I think Aramon has probably been in and used the webway more than anybody. Sorry, Emperor. He's used it more times than I think anybody else has, human-wise, though. He's been in it multiple times. He's also sniffed the Black Library multiple times.
Yeah, we're going to get that in a second. Yeah, effectively. But to recap, Aramon's plan is to break into the webway, somewhere that only Eldar can go, fight his way to the most important part of the webway, depending...
Back it up just a little bit. I want to go to somewhere that no one knows exists.
Yeah.
Into an impenetrable labyrinth.
Guarded by the most powerful versions. And when I say plural, there's not a... And when I say, like, plural's not... There's two solitaires or three solitaires. There are thousands of solitaires standing here. And their only purpose is no one gets into the library. Anyway, the GW made, I think, 20 years of writing out of this. So let's have fun. we'll just go with kind of the quick hits here. Aramon obviously finds his way into
the Which is wildly impressive, by the way.
Yeah. Well, he did it because... All right. We both like Aramon a lot. Aramon seems to fall into traps a lot.
Well, okay.
Isn't
his initial finding of the webway Tzeentch setting him up? Probably.
Yeah.
Because he kind of, again, leads him with the carrot. Here's infinite knowledge. Also, I know that it's probably never going to be found because you have to go through these guys that are never going to let you in.
Right.
And I'm just going to keep leading you on with this. And this will probably keep you on your lifelong goal that you'll never reach, and you won't find any other way to stop me. So, whatever.
Yeah. The Eldar, at some point in the lore, were not doing a cast on Szevak. It was an Inquisitor. There's a human Inquisitor.
He's a scrub.
Yeah, Czevak.
I'm sorry, his story's dumb.
That's why. We're just not going to bother with him. But effectively...
somebody's going to be like, that's my favorite story.
Sorry. It's just bad, though.
I'm sorry, it is.
But he does. He befriends the Eldar, and the Eldar actually give him access to the webway. The real reason they do this is because they know Aramon's trying to get into the webway, and this was a trap. The Eldar, this Inquisitor now, Szevak, knows how to get in. The Eldar are well aware that by doing this, Aramon's going to capture him and torture him and learn the way in.
And they're setting it up because they want him to get here. They don't want Aramon in the webway.
Right.
However, they know that eventually he's going to stubborn human bully his way into the webway at some point in time. And they know that if I let him into the webway right here, I know where he is. I can set up traps. I can set up defenses. I can lead him away from where I actually want him. If he bullies his way into the webway on a different place, it's going to be much more difficult.
And that's because the Eldar still are, there's not a lot of them. And there are, they'd like to have control over this situation.
And we say there's not a lot of them. There's like so many of them.
Yeah, but there used to be more.
They used to own the galaxy.
I'm going to go ahead and complain now, because the way Aramon gets into the webway is he also senses there's a trap here, and he uses a forgotten portal. Because Eldar, the smartest race in the galaxy, with a library with all the knowledge of the galaxy, forgot about one of their doors. They have an entire group of things called Farseers, who are supposed to see into the future. Anyway, Eldred. Aramon busts his way.
Those guys also destroyed 99% of the race, but continue.
They did. But Armand busts his way into the webway via a back door and is making his way with his legion through the webway towards the Black Library.
You know who didn't forget about this door?
Eldred.
Dredd showed up.
Brad's favorite.
I do love Eldred so much.
It's definitely your favorite.
Wildly so much.
Yeah. Eldred shows up and just beats the pants off of Armand and kicks him back.
Wildly so. Yeah,
just kicks him right out of the webway.
Laughably does a couple like WWE finishing moves. Yeah. And then just as Eldar do, deuces out and goes, Armand kind of goes, hey, man, what the shit just happened? Also, weren't we fighting like 2 seconds ago?
Eventually, because this is all occurring during Abaddon's 13th Black Crusade, he goes again and again and again. And he constantly...
This is also time travel stuff.
Yeah, so Armand continuously tries...
This is after and before the 13th Crusade.
I don't feel like diving into each and every single one of these because read the books, but... He breaks in with a captured sister who's actually a demon because she's actually a saint.
Hey, you know what? I'm going to encompass these with Roadrunner.
Yeah.
Because this is all Warner Brothers stuff. Ahriman is Wile E. Coyote, super genius. And the Harlequins and everybody inside the webway consistently lets him do his...
trap him and outsmart him. Yeah.
Just he keeps doing his... Acme catapults, yep, and slingshots and everything else. And he almost gets there and he constantly doesn't. And I know we're doing a cast on this and the stories are actually pretty cool. But the problem is that they always go to failure because Ahriman is playing a game that he thinks is a fair game.
You know, I'm going to take a little tangent here. Just real quick tangent. This is why Abaddon breaking the sky was such a cool moment.
Yes.
Because it was the first time in all of GW's writing where the bad guy won. They've struggled
with
this.
Hold on. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
When?
I have to go to fantasy for this. Archaon. Archaon won. He broke the game.
He did, but this happened before that.
No, that's true. True, true, true.
Yeah. You're right. Archaon broke the... Yeah. Archaon ended... That was borderline mean. Because, I mean, millions of players globally got a note, hey, your game's over.
What happened? The bad guys won. This is what happens.
The bad guy wins. The world resets and you get double turns. Anyway. anyway, back to the cast at hand. This all is back and forth constantly. The army keep them out. We then get to the end of 7th edition, going into 8th edition.
Yunari?
Yeah, and the Yunari. This story I like a lot.
They should have finished. You're going to get me. I got to get my cheat. If you see me right now, I'm woosong. I'm getting my cheat together because this. Screw it. I'm going to rant. Don't care.
Yeah. Yeah.
This was a fantastic storyline. This is the return of Bobby G.
Yep.
This is Yvrain. This is the rise of the Inari. You need the God of Death. So many storylines are going on during this time with the 13th Crusade and the Rift being created. Mm-hmm. All of these things. This is Indominus time.
Yeah.
Too. And then they just went,
yeah,
I'm out on the storyline and didn't finish it, man.
Which of us is ranked in the top 10 in ITC every year?
Oh, screw you.
Yeah, it's your guys' fault. This is what happened. Yunari got killed by competitive players because it's one of the best storylines in the game. And
so good. And they might dropped it.
Yeah, because Flying Circus.
Oh, it's not even that. It's Flying Circus and Soul Burst.
The Soul Burst was horrifying. Oh, look, Dark Reapers. Anyway.
Sorry.
Sorry. The tangent, if you guys don't know what we're talking about, just be glad you didn't play then.
Except that this one was a trash fire.
It's also 8th edition. After the fall of Cadia, Ahriman goes back into the webway. And this time, while going through the webway, he actually encounters Yvrain, her Yunari, and her triumvirate. And his plan was to kind of grab them, capture them, and use them as a way into the Black Library. So he builds this kind of like, it's cool. They're fighting in the webway, and he makes a void pocket within the webway and pulls them all into this void pocket.
And his plan is to effectively psychically dominate them.
Yeah, and just destroy them. Yvrain, as soon as they're pulled in the just lashes out. But this is when Yrieix's kind of earlier in her powers. When she lashes out, one thing that happens is...
To be fair, this is early on when Yrieix doesn't know that she's still the chosen of the, you know, the god of death. And she does crazy shit with her
powers. Incredible powers. I mean, raising a Primarch from the dead being one.
Yep.
But in order to get them into this pocket, Ahriman used a spell that actually sacrificed a number of Thousand Sons soldiers, whatever you call it. These are the Rubrics. Yeah, the Rubrics. Just they're sitting there and they're, you know, they are destroyed for this. They're just lying there on the ground. Yvraine, when she feels, you know, trapped and kind of lashes out, those Rubrics rise from the dead. Not the automaton, but actually the...
Well, she literally tries to make... number five. She tries to make... She effectively counterspells. There you go, D&D. She counterspells and accidentally...
Raises them from the dead.
Resurrects them full body.
Yeah. For the first time in 9,000 years, 8,000 years, Ahriman is looking at one of his brothers.
Yep.
Looking him straight in the eye. And Ahriman...
By the way, something he could not do
ever
for the last 9,000 years.
Immediately when this happens, Ahriman sees this power of Yvraine and just says... Well, not killing her, and teleports everyone back into the webway because he was about to end Yvraine, by the way.
Ahriman does a full Brad and goes, ooh, look, squirrel. And goes, remember the thing I 100% was about to achieve? I want to find out this instead.
This is
shiny.
This is way cooler. They come back into the webway.
Sorry, I can't even laugh at this. Ahriman gets the shiny. Wants to do it and goes, look, I know I was just about to psychically kill you, but
could we be friends?
So my bad, but also, would you tell me how you did that? Weirdly enough, a hard no happens.
Giant battle. And of course, the guys that she just resurrected get killed. That's kind of the tragedy.
Like instantly. Here. Also, everybody that's Eldar smoke bombs and leaves.
Mm-hmm. And I don't want to have to dive too far into Eldar because we're going to lose, I don't know, 11 hours if we try it right now. But effectively, Ahriman realizes at this stage, this is his new focus. I have to go track down Yvraine and, you know,
the Yunari. He also crazy comes up with a plan that involves going to places that he should not even pretend to go to.
Well, that's what's cool. So as we come into 10th edition, because we get at this stage in 10th edition, when we're recording this, we have no Eldar Codex, no Dark Eldar Codex, no Yunari Codex, which they're not making, but I'm saying it out there.
You know, screw this. You can edit this out if you want. Ahriman decides to Big Dick Jones it and goes, I'm going to the Dark City.
Yeah. Ahriman decides he's going to Camara.
Like, that's a real thing he said out loud. Yeah. Okay. And the thing
Ahriman meets Vec. That's going to be a party.
Yes. And the thing is Ahriman, at this point in time, to be fair again, holy crap, Ahriman's powers have grown so exponentially.
Yeah.
And in these last couple stories with him and Yvraine and stuff like that, his mastery of the warp is next level. It's not Magnus, but for a non-demon Primarch.
I mean, that's the thing.
Knowledge-wise, I actually think that he might be better.
Yeah.
Power-wise, he's lower.
He's pushing. I mean, I would actually push him into Eldar level powers now. He's not Eldrad, obviously, but he's Eldar level power.
I think knowledge-wise, he's one of the, if not, he knows so much now.
Yeah, he's above Abaddon. Yeah, of a, we'll call, I'm doing, you guys can't see me doing air quotes. I'm doing human in quotes. For a human, he may be the most knowledgeable human.
Oh, for a human, I think. Yeah. Well, we still have.
Trajan?
You have the Emperor and.
Well, the Emperor is not human, and he's also in human.
True story.
And he might actually be dead. Anyway.
Anybody that's not a perpetual, I guess.
Yeah, that's something, and like, it's him and. Maybe one custode and a Grey Knight.
Yeah, I'll say, but he just has, he's done 10,000 years of knowledge seeking, and he's failed this is another reason. This is what we'll wrap it up with.
Right.
The reason why I love Aramon, and we've made fun of it, but it's the very things that we've making fun of are why he's one of my favorite characters in 40K, because he fails time and time again, but he's self-aware that he's failing. He knows he's playing in a rigged game at the casino, mm-hmm. and he's desperately trying to even the odds.
And he tries to not lose again. That's the right thing. Every time he loses, he takes the time. Why did I lose? Figures out what it was. It's 90% of the time Zeench.
Yeah. And the thing is, he keeps getting led into traps. And a lot of the times he knows he's being led into traps, but he's just trying to learn from that trap how to not be trapped again. And I love that about his character.
The challenge that Thousand Suns have is Magnus is, if you like power, he's got power. But he's kind of whiny. Magnus,
he's emo.
Mentally, he's emo, these things. So
he loses mentally a lot. Dude taps to strikes a lot.
The Thousand Suns needed a powerful, leader who just believed in something. And that's what Aramon is.
Oh, he was loved by the masses until it whoops the rubric, but he tries to do the right thing. Even when he's doing the wrong thing,
he's the wrong thing a lot.
Yeah. So. But he thinks that he's trying to get the right thing. His goal is right thing. Everything he does is bad.
What's actually kind of cool, one thing I will say that I really do like about Thousand Suns is Magnus and Aramon are both united, even though they're separate in their attempts in overturning Zeench.
100%.
And by overturning, I don't mean taking his place. Both of them are obsessed with undermining.
They don't want to be under his thumb.
Well, Aramon wants to replace him. And there is a side story here that there is a belief within the Eldar that if Aramon ever breached the Black Library, he actually would gain the knowledge to take the place of Zeench, which is a really cool side story that I probably should have mentioned earlier in this cast.
An epic prophecy of world-changing dimensions?
These things just come to my memory.
What, John? Fuck it. Let's just do that one.
Yeah, I'll edit that one in later. Oof. All right.
Jesus. You're going to be choked to death.
Yeah.
Brad dies in this cast.
Yeah, with that, we will conclude. Next week, we decided that we're going to go back to Xenos. And if we're going to go back to Xenos, let's start with the oldest of the Xenos, Necrons.
I think you meant to say Necrontyr.
Necrontyrs. We covered them a little bit before.
One of us might have just done the War in Heavens at
Adepticon. Someone may have just spent a lot of time painting these things beautifully, by the way. If you guys want to see some cool pictures, track down Brad's team at Adepticon. Well, actually, no. Alan's team at Adepticon.
I'll say it's wildly not my team.
Alan's team at Adepticon. Brad's on it.
I did paint stuff. I did.
Did it?
They use them.
They use that. That was my next question. You painted it neat.
I also did a lot of painting on the display board because it was a lot of spray paint.
It's fine. Yeah. Brad's going to paint black on the black thing. Got it. Okay. Again, thanks for listening. Please join our Discord. It's a great place to actually interact with us. You can see we're very active in there.
There's so many great discussions. Yeah. I know I'm shamelessly self-promoting myself, mm-hmm. but man, the Discord is super active. And there's a lot of great discussions going on mm-hmm. every day, really.
Yeah, I mean, we actually, some of our future casts have been added on now. We're going to do one on power armor. People are coming there and recommending casts. We're going to do individual casts on Chaos Gods. If you like what we're doing and you want to steer us in a direction that you want us to go into, join our Discord. It's obviously free.
It's not free. And what helps us a lot, though, go to our Patreon.
Yeah, and that way we can get better microphones than the ones I bought on Amazon on a whim.
True story. This started on I Talk About Lore a Lot, and John said, maybe you should shut up and we should just do a cast on this.
Yeah, as I just drive to my house, I'll put microphones up, and here we are.
I'll get to talk every once in a while, too.
Yeah. But with that, this is John Barsotti and Brad Chester.
This guy.
See you guys next week.